Good afternoon. My name is Scott Ritter. Allow me to introduce myself for those who don't know me. I'm a former United States Marine Corps intelligence officer. I participated in Operation Desert Storm and served as the chief weapons inspector for the United Nations in Iraq. My main interests are international relations and armed conflicts in different parts of the world. I am convinced that we all should know a little more about a person who, to the applause of those I call the global elite, is ready to fight to the last Ukrainian, President Volodymyr Zelensky. Mr. President, there have been numerous publications about you, but everything seems to disappear from the web. Your image is carefully managed, and not without reason. You immediately understood why I named my film Agent Zelensky, didn't you? Let's begin.
You have had many film roles. Which one is your favorite? I would say that Servant of the People is probably my favorite.
The year is 2015. It's the premiere of the first season of Servant of the People series. According to the credits, the producer was Volodymyr Zelensky. In reality, he wasn't producing it by himself. Instead, his promotion had begun. No wonder such a role became one of his favorites. Zelensky portrayed the character Vasily Goluborodko, a school history teacher who becomes the president of Ukraine.
I want to compare that situation to situation where, for example, you come into the plane, you're boarding, and you're taking your seat, and now you see that man who look like a pilot, who dressed like a pilot, who speak like a pilot, greeting passengers, but who is not a pilot at all, who is an actor, who played a pilot in response for your life.
Before the presidential elections, no one had seen a single press conference from the showman. Only interviews and videos were broadcast. Well, you understand, it makes possible to retake or rewrite a dumb answer. Almost all statements Zelensky made were on behalf of the cinematic president, Goluborodko.
To all the people who want to quarrel with us, to divide our country, to separate us by color, by language, and so on, to all of you, I can't speak for myself, as I am a person of culture. So let one of the characters familiar to everyone, Vasily Goluborodko, say it. And all the rest of you, villains, go to hell. In all this story, the Ukrainian population became the object of manipulation. The creation of the TV series Servant of the People, in which he was prepared for his role, marked the beginning of imposing an image on people that he could be a potential head of state. And after that, he ran for elections. It was an absolutely skillful manipulation.
Now watch the hands. The final third season of Servant of the People was released just 4 days before the first round of the presidential election. Vasily Goluborodko emerged victorious, became the head of the country, and transformed it into a powerful and prosperous nation. Damn. This is the best pre-election campaign in the history of mankind. And it worked. In real life, on the 21st of April, Volodymyr Zelensky defeated Petro Poroshenko with over 70%, 73-23% of the votes. Clearly, such a scenario was not created in Ukraine, nor by Ukraine. Here, our compatriots are ahead of the entire planet.
The role of Hollywood in Washington, D.C., it is, first of all, it's not the decision makers, but this is creators of idea, concepts. So if the idea flying well with the audience, you can repeat that idea in real life, in real politics, and it's gonna play. So this is similarity in that Servant of People TV series and a film of Chris Rock produced and directed Head of State, when it was a black president who come from a Democratic Party and served the people.
And if this works, why not replicate the scheme in a country close to Russia? And why not elect someone there based on the same principle? Someone who is unconditionally following orders.
That is a carefully prepared operation by one of the intelligence services or all of the intelligence services in the United States and in NATO to make sure that their guy is in charge and will do what they tell him to do rather than somebody who has ideas of his own.
A carefully prepared operation by one of the intelligence agencies. What a revelation. Michael, thank you for this. It allows us to look at the following facts with an understanding of who is behind them. Well, let's figure out how and with whose help Washington started pushing actor and comedian Zelensky.
Игорь Валерьевич Коломойский.
Ихор Валерьевич Коломойский. Do we have any connection? Yes, of course. Well, we have business relations. We are TV partners. We all work for these. How many? Five or six families.
Five or six families? Was I rewatching The Godfather just now? As if Zelensky is talking about the mafia. And it seems to be true. Igor Kolomoisky is a billionaire and an oligarch. Currently, he's under investigation by a U.S. federal court for money laundering. Back then, he was a figure of importance. Even across the ocean.
In 2014, Коломойський becomes the uncrowned king of Ukraine. Not only the governor, not only the ruler of Ukrnafta, and head of the bank, that is much stronger than any state bank. He became the leading oligarch.
8 years ago, why was it decided to make Коломойський the key player in the operation to bring Zelensky to power? In 2015, Petro Poroshenko nationalized his main assets, such as the Ukrnafta company and later private bank. There is undoubtedly a personal vendetta at play. During the presidential elections, Коломойський was happy to criticize Poroshenko on his 1+1 channel, and at the same time to support Zelensky. Is it possible to say that it was Коломойський who brought Zelensky to power? Definitely not. Mr. Volodymyr has other puppeteers behind the scenes.
Are you dependent on Ihor Valerievich? And could it mean that after your victory in the presidential elections, Коломойський will rule Ukraine? I am a completely independent person. No offense, but a man who could control me hasn't yet been born.
If Zelensky was really undead, rope of Коломойський, I predict the private bank will be run by Коломойський again, but it's not happened. So that means he has no obligation to do more. He just not putting him in a jail, and that's enough for Коломойський to be very thankful for him. After that, he will start playing the card as his masters of puppet want.
By the time Zelensky came to power, these puppeteers had already provided him with a financial cushion. It's doubtful that anyone remembered his earnings from the movies.
Regarding Zelensky and his inner circle, it is also important to take into account all the manipulations and financial frauds that characterize this team. Firstly, Zelensky concealed some parts of his stakes in companies before the presidential elections. And then, in particular, his mentor, Коломойський, used them for money laundering.
Empty words? By no means. As I mentioned, we will operate with facts. In the fall of 2021, investigative journalists published the so-called Pandora Papers, nearly 12 million confidential documents from financial companies in different countries were revealed, including offshore data on 35 world leaders. Volodymyr Zelensky and his partners from the Cartel 95 studio were among them. The Ukrainian president indeed owned offshore companies, including a stake in Multex Multicapital Corporation. Zelensky modestly omitted this information in his declaration. But most importantly, in 2012 to 2016, Коломойський transferred $41 million to Zelensky's offshore company.
He could be jailed in a normal country for such an offense.
But this is Ukraine, and Zelensky is its president. And according to the offshore documents, he is a very wealthy president.
Are you planning to use the state residences? Guys, let some kids live in these residences. Like some vacation camps for people who really need it.
In my opinion, it sounds cute, especially when you don't know about the residency he owns. Ready to find out? Let's go. Firstly, a villa in Miami for himself, worth $34 million. I've been to Florida and can understand the taste of the president of Ukraine. Secondly, a house in Israel for his parents on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. It's worth $8 million. Europe, Zelensky prefers Italy. Tuscany, the best wines. By the way, one of the most expensive resorts in the country, Forte del Marbi. Houses here are worth their weight in gold. In 2017, together with his wife, he bought a villa 600 meters from the sea. According to the declaration, it was worth about $3.8 million at that time. Is that all? Not at all. From the south, we move north. Not to Siberia, of course, but to London. Old Center. Legendary Baker Street. Opposite the Sherlock Holmes Museum, there's another Zelensky residence. An apartment worth $3 million. Why? Probably to stay while visiting his owners with a report. More on that later. Apparently, the real estate was purchased through the company of his business partner, Sergei Schefer. That's why he's called Zelensky's personal wallet in Ukraine. I almost forgot about real estate. Georgia, not the state, the country. A new multi-story apart hotel in the city of Batumi. You might ask, Batumi? What is that? We'll take a look. It's also a seaside resort. Apartments are under renovation, but an expensive finish, panoramic windows, and views of the city and the mountains. Hint, that it was built for well-to-do people. At least five apartments here belong to Zelensky. Finally, the settlement of Levadia, an elite residential complex emperor.
Look, a magnificent view of Zelensky's house opens up. Here it is, a seashore over there.
Lions, wide staircases, and columns. On the roof, there's a luxurious terrace, a pool, and a wonderful sea view. But guys, it's Crimea. Crimea, which is currently under Russian control. Zelensky made a mistake here, and the Russians will surely figure out how to use it to their advantage. Zelensky's penthouse was purchased here in 2013, right before the so-called Crimean Spring. Nowadays, such a property could be worth about $1 million. However, a different amount is stated in his declaration. 1,384,000 hibernias, or about $164,000. Well, we don't even need to mention the real estate in Kyiv or the official residence of the head of the republic in Konya Zaspa. Even without those, it's quite a collection of villas, houses, and apartments. However, the Ukrainian president is in no rush to give them to children, at least not to other people's children. Unfortunately, we have to admit the obvious. Volodymyr Zelensky has always been stingy and greedy.
When I saw this person running between tables and collecting tips, roughly speaking, making compliments with an ugly smile, right from that moment, he disgusted me. He was performing at events where the payment had already been made in advance. His group was paid in cash, and still, he was running around collecting money from the tables. It showed what he had initially been like.
He was visiting Hollywood here in Los Angeles. He privately requested for meeting with, and some kind of arrangements to meet and have a dinner with the famous Hollywood stars like Leo DiCaprio or others. In private, not through the protocol. As a president, already sitting president, who want to private dinner with a great star. This is telling a lot about his greed, about his ego.
Actors are forgiven for having villas worldwide and making big money. That's their personal business. But there are questions for a president who presents himself as a man of the people and a fighter against corruption while hiding a dirty history of money laundering.
These mythical Ukrainian roads are only built and repaired in someone's vivid imagination.
The most ambitious project of the Ukrainian president turned out to be the biggest, with a capital B, embezzlement. In the spring of 2020, Zelensky promised to build and repair 6,500 kilometers of roads in Ukraine in a couple of years. In autumn, the Prosecutor General's Office of Ukraine discovered that 129 billion hryvnias went to the big construction project, though only 127 billion were allocated from the country's budget. At first, I thought maybe Zelensky wanted to build roads not only in his country, but maybe also in Poland. Nope. Just 4,000 kilometers of roads cost 120 billion hryvnias. By comparison, in 2018, only 40 billion were spent on 3,800 kilometers of roads. So the cost per kilometer tripled. Meanwhile, the same companies won a significant part of the tenders. There was a lack of funds, but roads are sacred. That's why 1 billion hryvnias from the COVID-19 fund were allocated to construction, while thousands of Ukrainians were dying from the virus. Moreover, 62 billion hryvnias allocated for cancer treatment were also spent. Meanwhile, Ukraine ranked second in Europe in terms of oncological diseases.
I thought that the systemic corruption built by Poroshenko in Ukraine could not get any worse, but Zelensky surpassed him. There are no standards, no principles at all.
In 2015, The Guardian named Ukraine the most corrupt country in Europe. You might say, that was before Zelensky. What about 2023? Well, nothing has changed. Zelensky continues to steal and deceive. Do you remember his words?
перше, найперше завдання.
Our first task is a ceasefire in Donbas. I assure you, I'll do whatever it takes for our heroes to no longer die.
I haven't heard a word about the civilians in Donbas, and I'm sure neither of you. Zelensky was speaking about the militants of the so-called anti-terrorist operation. At that time, Eastern Ukraine had been under shelling for 5 years, and that's why the words about peace were so eagerly awaited. I would like to remind you that in 2014, there was a coup d'etat called Maidan. Did it happen on its own, without anyone's help? I agree with you. There is no doubt. The opposition seized power with the support of various radical right-wing movements. The eastern and southern regions of the country stood against the new illegal government, but the resistance was brutally suppressed. On May 2, 2014, Ukrainian nationalists burned 48 people alive in the trade union's house in Odessa. At that time, Zelensky, a popular actor in Ukraine and Russia, had zero reaction. But the Odessa events became a point of no return for the country. Residents of Donbas decided to separate from Ukraine. In response, Kyiv declared its citizens as terrorists and launched an army against them. Over time, the civil war escalated into an armed conflict with Russia. However, all of this was preceded by extensive preparation and support from the United States and Western countries.
The United States has invested some $5 billion in Ukraine since 1991, when it became an independent state again after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And that money has been spent on supporting the aspirations of the Ukrainian people to have a strong democratic government that represents their interests.
As a result, destroyed cities, chaos, and the loss of life on both sides of the conflict. In our country, it's usual to blame everything on Russia. But what did President Volodymyr Zelensky do himself to prevent this horror? Firstly, he could have implemented the Minsk agreements. In September 2014, Russia, Ukraine, Germany, and France signed them. One of the critical conditions for peace was granting special status to Donbas. December 2019, a joint conference following the Normandy format meeting.
It is necessary, of course, to extend the agreement term on the special status of certain regions of Donbas and ultimately make this norm permanent.
Here comes the moment for Zelensky to repay debt, for wealth, for coming to power. Just look at it. He doesn't even hide his smirk during the speech of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Apparently, he already knew that the Minsk agreements were just a string covering the preparations for a full-scale war between Ukraine and Russia. As for Russia and Donbas, they were deceived from the very beginning. Furthermore, both Zelensky and Petro Poroshenko were eager to join not only the European Union, but also NATO. And NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has been promising to accept Ukraine for many years. Of course, this irritates and angers Russia. Who wants to have a constant military threat at their doorstep? As an American, I wouldn't be happy either, for example, with Chinese military bases on the Mexican border. But Russia is different. Let's turn Ukraine against it, arm it to the teeth, and sit it into battle. U.S. foreign policy expert James Jotras accurately assesses what is happening.
Our policy, however, is to weaken and destroy Russia. Now, for that purpose, yes, we are interested in Ukraine. Ukraine is a club we can beat the Russians with. It has nothing to do with Ukraine, nothing to do with Ukrainians, who are simply expendable people as far as these governments are concerned.
But it seems like the authorities in Ukraine don't really care. Besides, President Zelensky and his team are adding fuel to the fire.
I am initiating consultations in the framework of the Budapest Memorandum. If they aren't held again, or their results don't guarantee security for our country, Ukraine will have every right to believe that the Budapest Memorandum is not working, and all the package decisions of 1994 are being questioned.
The Budapest Memorandum is an agreement under which Ukraine gave up nuclear weapons in exchange for security guarantees. In 1994, it was signed by Russia, the United States, Ukraine, and the United Kingdom. Ukraine had to agree because it didn't have the money to maintain a nuclear arsenal. And recent history has shown that the world is very lucky it turned out that way.
Even if we couldn't maintain them, we could reduce the nuclear capabilities instead. And we could use it to blackmail the entire world. And they would give us money for the maintenance.
Imagine that. A nuclear power that blackmails the whole world, demanding money. Would you like to have such a neighbor? I'm sure you wouldn't. No one would. The president of Ukraine practically declares his desire to regain nuclear weapons, and Russia initiates a special military operation. To bring it to this point, Ukraine had to be made an enemy of Russia, or anti-Russian.
The idea was to create a Nazi Ukraine, because only a Nazi Ukraine could fight against Russia. Only the Nazis. Any other type would never fight against Russia. So they needed to build a Nazi Ukraine.
After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine started saturating itself with nationalism. Yushchenko became the first Ukrainian president made by the West. Actually, not just a president. Even his personal life was America's achievement. I have to give credit to our system. We know what an excellent work is. Take a look in the 90s. A high-ranking employee of the U.S. State Department, Catherine Chumachenko, a native of Chicago and the daughter of Ukrainian immigrants, came to Kyiv for work. As a child, like many other children in the diaspora, she went through the scout camp Plasm. I'll tell you more about that later. Then she became a member of the neo-Nazi organization National Alliance.
Initially, Yekaterina Chumachenko sought a husband among the executives who could really lead Ukraine. So Chumachenko asked Yushchenko's assistant, Rybachuk, to put her near Yushchenko on a plane heading from Kiev to Washington. 9 hours after the flight, he was absolutely in love, left his two children and wife, and went to Chumachenko as a banker.
At that moment, the flywheel started spinning with new force. Zelensky, under careful dictation, completes the bloody plan. Yushchenko was the first to make nationalism and Russophobia the ideology of Ukraine at the state level. In 2006, he rehabilitated the nationalist Ukrainian organization OUN-UPA, which executed Poles and Jews during the Second World War. In 2010, he bestowed the titles of Heroes of Ukraine upon fascist collaborators Stepan Bandera and Roman Shukovich. He even threatened to expel the Russian Black Sea Fleet from Crimea. Essentially, Yushchenko severed ties with Russia, giving our country a blank check. Perhaps you'll ask me again if my imagination is playing tricks on me.
At the time, one of the offices in the SBU building was allocated to CIA personnel. There were even anecdotal cases when the U.S. ambassador, together with his entourage, handed out diplomas to the graduates of the SBU Academy. And there were the representatives of American intelligence agencies.
In 2010, Yushchenko lost the election to Viktor Yanukovych. The new president stripped Bandera and Shukovich of their hero titles and sought to restore relations with Russia. But turning Ukraine into an anti-Russian state was only a matter of time. Let's dig a little deeper. The Joint Institute of the U.S. and German Ministries of Defense. Previously, they trained intelligence agents there. Since 1993, they've trained political elites and specialists from different countries to promote democracy. And that's the official version.
They were focused on searching for suitable agents. It means how to attract people to an active position, to confrontation. Of course, all security officials and military personnel were recruited through the Marshall Center.
Graduates of the Institute, ministers, ambassadors, parliamentarians, and advisors. 14,000 significant people from 157 countries, including Ukrainians. The program consists of lectures, seminars, internships at major universities in Western Europe and the United States, receptions, and museum visits. But the main thing is career advancement in their homeland. This is what Ukrainian political scientist Andriy Mishin could have obtained. In 1998, he worked at the Ukrainian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and was preparing an important agreement with Russia. It was about military political cooperation.
The West advised us in every possible way to remove this topic. Again, they insisted on the removal of dual citizenship between Russia and Ukraine. And Deputy Minister San Sanich Chali said that the political advisor to the United States Embassy in Ukraine wanted to meet with me.
Andriy Mishin only held the position of the second secretary. The political advisor was several ranks above him. This was unusual. But the conversation turned out even more bizarre.
It all started with a strange question. Andriy, do you understand that Russia will soon disintegrate? How? He says, well, you see, how they recruit, how they provoke you. There was Chechnya, and there will be another Chechnya. Maybe Siberian Republic and Tatarstan. You know, it's like a funnel, the same as how the Soviet Union collapsed. Everyone can be drawn into this funnel. That's why Ukraine should join NATO. We are very interested in the young generation of politicians and security officials who could work with us.
Later, Mishin was taken to Moldova, Switzerland, Italy, Georgia, and the United States on behalf of the Marshall Center. They gave lectures on international conflicts and military patriotic education for youth and provided them with analytical literature. In return, they required short reports, for example, on the socio-political situation in Ukraine and the preparation of lectures for American military personnel, special agents, and diplomats. All topics were related to Russia and the former Soviet republics. After the Maidan in 2014, the Marshall Center became a mecca for the highest-ranking Ukrainian officials and military personnel. Here's one of the letters from the Marshall Center addressed to the chairman of the Security Service of Ukraine, Valentin Nalivaychenko. It's an invitation to a seminar on the strategic development of Ukraine. Students are Ukrainian ministers and generals, instructors, representatives of intelligence agencies from the United States and the United Kingdom.
I think 100% of high-ranking Ukrainian officials, one way or another, have received training at this center. Essentially, they were training people with one task, to counteract the Russian Federation, now or in the future, solely for that purpose.
One of the seasons of the TV series Servant of the People is dedicated to presidential elections. Candidate Goloborodko hires a professional PR specialist, but later fires him, and along with a team of friends, develop and runs his election campaign. Did presidential candidate Zelensky do the same? Of course not. During the elections, his campaign headquarters secretly worked with the Washington lobbying agency, Signal Group Consulting. The task was to arrange meetings between Zelensky, the Trump administration, and members of Congress. Zelensky's headquarters denied this connection, but here you can see the documents. The service agreement and Signal Group's report to the U.S. Department of Justice stated that Zelensky paid them nearly $70,000. Quite affordable for a presidency, isn't it? Perhaps the actors spared money, or maybe they gave him a good discount on their PR services. However, Zelensky was eager to please the U.S. and U.K. authorities. Therefore, after the elections, the number of foreign PR agencies increased. Please meet Andrew Mack. Since November 2019, he has been an external advisor to Zelensky. He's an American citizen and a descendant of Ukrainian immigrants. The director of the lobbying firm SKD Knickerbocker, Stephen Kruppen, former speechwriter for President Barack Obama, now works for Zelensky. Shai Franklin founded the lobbying firm Your Global Strategy. It builds bridges between Ukrainian government and American mayors. It seems that one of these guys had a hand in quite a terrible idea. We are talking about a glamorous photo shoot amid hostilities. The main character of the photo session is the First Lady of Ukraine, Olena Zelenska, a desperate housewife alongside her brave hero husband. Zelensky, as usual, looks unshaven and stern. His military style complements his wife's luxurious outfits. Take note of how well she wears the $7,900 Louis Vuitton coat. The extras are wearing uniforms from the military brand 5.11 Multicam. The average cost is about $8,000. The very famous and expensive American photographer, Annie Leibovitz, did the photo shoot. In the past, she worked with John Lennon and Demi Moore. Her fee for a single working day is $75,000. It goes without saying, the team of stylists, makeup artists, and journalists surely didn't work for free. Those who have forgotten, during this time, innocent people are suffering and dying. The country is devastated and heavily reliant on foreign aid. Because of this, the photo session did not sit well with some Ukrainians and foreigners. Some even compared the Zelensky's photo shoot to the pictures of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. And all of this is part of the payment for Zelensky's hard work as an agent serving America and the British crown.
We had a meeting at the MI6 office. Unfortunately, I can't disclose all the information. It's a matter of state affairs.
Autumn 2020. Ukrainian media accidentally, or maybe not, learned about Zelensky's secret meeting with Richard Moore, the head of MI6. Not just anywhere, but at the headquarters of British Intelligence Service. According to the president, the meeting was about protecting Ukraine's sovereignty.
Yes, the meeting of Volodymyr Zelensky is something new, because if we look at World War II, the Cold War, we have never had real meetings between the leader of a country in a state of war and a group of intelligence representatives.
As a Secret Service agent, I'd like to tell you that there are special norms of decency and protocol. When a president of a sovereign country is on a foreign territory, he should meet with his counterpart. The only exception is if the head of intelligence himself comes to Ukraine to meet with Zelensky.
Coming down to the lowest level, to the head of the intelligence agency, is not a simple admission of guilt. At that time, the person becomes an actual professional agent. It is clear. One handler always works with one agent. In the case of Zelensky, the head of MI6, Richard Moore, became his direct handler.
Trust my experience. You can't just make someone work as an agent without a hook or substantial grounds. And if we carefully trace the events leading up to this remarkable meeting, we will find them. In the summer of 2020, British intelligence almost captured the internationally renowned Wagner PMC members. These Wagnerians took Bakhmut, for example, Palmyra in Syria. They significantly interfered in spreading British policy in Africa. It happened that the mercenaries slipped right under the nose of MI6. Whether it's true or not, they say the operation failed due to the office of the President of Ukraine. Somebody called and warned them. Now, no one will figure out if it was a mistake, a calculation, or foolishness. That's why Richard Moore didn't bother investigating. They summoned Zelensky to show him his place and at the same time to discuss the extent of his independence and freedom in Ukraine.
They expect proposals about independent media from us. They are ready to finance them together with Ukraine to provide Ukraine with information that corresponds to the main issue. Protection of freedom and human rights, and above all, shield the information that defends our country.
Everyone understands. The MI6 office gave the President of Ukraine a precise directive. The thing is, after the Maidan in 2014, there are quite a lot of Ukrainian opposition media. Obviously, they were preventing the creation of an image of Russia as an enemy to Western countries. It was decided to end the dissenters with Zelensky's hands. And to prevent the president from getting bored and to help him practice English, he was surrounded by British security. This was in the spring of 2022, in the midst of war, in Bucha. Look at these scenes. Do you see a patch on the sleeve of one of the guys near Zelensky? The Ukrainian flag is upside down. A local would have been shot on the spot for this. But this guy is okay. Do you know why? Because he has the right to. He is a foreigner, like everyone else around Zelensky. In fact, judging by their pronunciation, they're British.
As we can see, Zelensky's security team consists of Brits. Quite marvelous, because we have the so-called Ninth Administration, the President's Security, with 1,800 professional military guys, special forces, and combat swimmers.
Well, not surprising. Firstly, UK intelligence services most likely helped Zelensky with the theatrical staging in Bucha. Secondly, the British follow every step of their agent, even during the meeting with the Pope. Oh, this episode deserves special attention. It seemed to me like a meeting between a priest and a devil. Judge for yourselves. Zelensky went to the Vatican in a black sweatshirt with the emblem of the UNO, Ukrainian Nationalist Organization. He gave the Pope an icon with a black silhouette instead of Christ. which is outright Satanism, according to church canons. He plopped into a chair before the host. For those unaware, this is a gross violation of etiquette. And he didn't pay much attention to Pope Francis's peaceful initiatives. Italians considered that rude. I'm sure this whole comedy was a distraction. The central communication of Zelensky took place not in the Pope's office, but in the next room, without the involvement of Pope Francis, but with the participation of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Holy See, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, a native Brit whose cardinals are conducting powerful propaganda in Ukraine. The Ukrainian president spoke with Gallagher for almost an hour and a half. But the main detail is that the head of MI6, Richard Moore, was also present at the meeting in the Vatican. Maybe this fact explains the record-breaking motorcade of the leader of independent Ukraine, over 20 cars.
To be sure that that guy did not make a trick to suddenly make a peace with Vladimir Putin, they take hostages, his kids and a wife, in Great Britain. This is another layer of security for masters of puppets.
How is it possible to reprogram the whole country and its people against Russia? Is how is Ukraine paying back now? I'll tell you more in the next episode. We've just started. My name is Scott Ritter. In the first episode, I told you how Volodymyr Zelensky came to power, who he really is, and who recruited him. Everyone knows that agents are given tasks. Zelensky is no exception. However, in his case, it's more like obligations, debts that cannot be ignored, like a deal with the devil. Over the course of 4 years of presidency, he has accomplished or brought to fruition at least 10 important tasks, each of them to varying degrees, has contributed to the destruction of Ukraine. Today, we'll examine all of them in detail. So task number one, to eliminate the Russian language.
If people in the East and Crimea want to speak Russian, let them. Leave them alone. Provide them with the opportunity to speak Russian on a legal basis. Language should never divide our home country.
2014, the words of this charming guy in a t-shirt resonated with many people in Ukraine, not just Russians. There were also many Ukrainians who spoke Russian and feared its prohibition. There were reasons for these concerns. Immediately after the Maidan protests, the Verkhovna Rada decided to repeal the law on the principles of the state language policy. This law had been in effect since 2012 and granted regional status to the Russian language in areas where it was the native language for at least 10% of the population. The repeal of this law became one of the reasons for the secession of Crimea and the civil war in the Donbass region. In the meantime, Zelensky himself had always spoken Russian and, most importantly, had defended it for many years until he became the president. In 2020, Zelensky made all schools in Ukraine Ukrainian language only. In my home country, the United States, documents and websites are created in two languages, English and Spanish. There are many Spanish language schools, and no one forces them to switch to English. This is fair and understandable. What's not understandable, why is English and not Russian the second language in Ukraine? Can you explain that to me? Are there many English Americans or Australians there?
The greatest inconsistency in what Zelensky and the Kiev government say lies in the fact that after starting the civil war in 2014, while attempting to restrict and prohibit the use of the native language by the population of Donbas, they now say, we will unite all territories into one nation. However, what is happening in Donbas today is an attempt of the Western Ukrainians, Galatians, and those who are anti-Russian to carry out ethnic cleansing. This presents a real problem, and this aspect is often silenced in the West.
Not only is it being silenced out, the West also supports it, and Zelensky is happy to do his best. Since January 2021, the entire service sector in the country has been switched to Ukrainian. You know, Zelensky once named Ukraine the center and heart of Europe, It seems to me that he got it wrong with the organs. It is heartless to violate the rights of 12.5 million of his own citizens. In the summer of 2021, the Constitutional Court of the country upheld the law on the Ukrainian language. Violations of this law are subject to fines. How could one hate his own people so much as to punish them for their native language? But take a look at this video. President Zelensky is pretending hard and diligently that he has forgotten Russia.
Далее гуманитарная катастрофа однозначно внутри в городе, потому что заехать продукты питания, лики, лекарств составляются списки. Наши ребята составляли, я знаю, составляли списки военные ребята, все, кто в полоне, в плену, да, все, кто в плену.
Perhaps someone will tell him that this is a disgusting play that won't convince even a child. Another obligation of such type to Western handlers was task number two, to finalize the church split.
Suitcase, train station, Russia.
April of 2023, siege in the Kyiv-Pirchevsk Lavra. What you see is the result of a long and painstaking work of my fellow countrymen. In December 2018, the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, or OCU, emerged in Ukraine with the support of Petro Poroshenko and the United States. One might wonder why. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarch already existed in the country, but apparently the term Moscow was a significant hindrance for the Ukrainian authorities to pray. That's why they created their own church with blackjack and their own tomos. In 2019, the OCU received a decree from the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, granting them autocephaly, that is, the independence from the Russian Orthodox Church.
That it formally remained part of the Russian Orthodox Church. Except for that formality, everything that Kiev possibly could have asked for was granted by Moscow. The tomos issued from Constantinople is a very different thing entirely. Supposed autocephaly, but under the control of Constantinople. That almost every detail of church life within the so-called schismatic church must be approved by Patriarch Bartholomew, who, of course, himself is then under the control of the State Department and the CIA.
The head of the OCU, Sergei Epifanius Dominko, started receiving frequent visits from American guests. In 2019, William Taylor, charged the affairs to Ukraine, came to meet him. And in January 2020, former CIA Director and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo paid a visit. The purpose of this visit will be revealed by him a bit later.
I made sure the U.S. supported international recognition of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, helped the Metropolitan escape Russian influence.
Epifanius awarded Mike Pompeo with a medal for this. Then there were meetings with Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Envoy for Ukraine. After that, there was a meeting with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The meeting's schedule resembled that of a foreign affairs minister. Americans used Zelensky to complete the division of Ukrainian Orthodox believers into the right and wrong factions. The right ones attended the sanctuaries of the new church, while with the assistance of the Ukrainian authorities, they seized temples from the canonical church and expelled the priests. Finally, the situation escalated to the Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra. As far as I know, it is one of the most important and ancient Orthodox shrines, dating back over 1,000 years. Unfortunately, the Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra was under the administration of monks from the canonical Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate. The Ministry of Culture of Ukraine decided it was heresy and terminated the lease agreement with the monastery. Security forces and nationalists besieged the walls of the Lavra. Now, the canonical Ukrainian Orthodox Church is under the threat of prohibition, and Volodymyr Zelensky continues to train his persuasive skills in his speeches.
Today, another step has been taken to strengthen the spiritual independence of our state and protect our society from old and cynical Moscow manipulations with religion. Ukraine is a territory of the greatest religious freedom in our part of Europe.
It's been very successful in creating, I would say, a kind of a fake Ukrainian, artificial Ukrainian identity that is hostile to Russia, that defines itself in opposition to a Russian identity. It grew somewhat during the Soviet time, but really has taken advantage of the last period since 1991, since Ukraine became an independent state.
In this substitution of Ukrainians' identity, common roots are being torn apart. And common shrines are being violated. The great victory over the Nazis in 1941-1945 had always united this nation. Even Volodymyr Zelensky recalled it not long ago.
You know, my grandfather, Simeon's brothers, and their families were killed by the Nazis. At that time, my grandfather was at the front. In the end, he endured the entire war and returned as a victor.
Volodymyr Zelensky's grandfather, Semyon Ivanovich, commanded a mortar platoon during the Great Patriotic War. In Soviet Ukraine, people like Semyon Zelensky were glorified with monuments and memorial sites. However, under Volodymyr Zelensky, all of these monuments have been destroyed, as it was in the 1940s under Hitler. Rewriting history has become the third task for Zelensky. Victory Day on May 9th was replaced with Europe Day by the president of Ukraine. If he remains in power a little longer, I am certain that Ukrainians will start celebrating July 4th, Independence Day of the United States, together with us. I've witnessed how everything Russian is being canceled in the West with the start of the special operation. Flags, poets, artists, musicians, they've all been banned. I am convinced that this was a planned campaign. The same thing happened in Ukraine, and it became another tool of division.
I want to remove Lenin and instead put someone who will be admired by everyone in the country. It's called literary characters, definitely not politicians. What's stopping you? Bulgakov? Ukrainian? Ukrainian. If you want to rub it into your neighbor, put up Gogol.
Gogol, Bulgakov. Under President Zelensky, Bulgakov was officially labeled as Russophobic, and his memorial plaque was removed from the wall of a university in Kyiv. Writer Nikolai Ostrovsky, who apparently came from Ukraine, didn't satisfy him either. Scientist Mikhail Lomonosov, writer Maxim Gorky, and finally, Alexander Pushkin. The great writer was the one who offended Ukrainian authorities the most. But what about freedom of speech and the media? It was precisely this issue that the head of MI6 discussed with Zelensky during their face-to-face meeting in London. There, Zelensky was given task number 4.
I personally stand for freedom of speech, and you know that very well. I will never in my life shut down any channels. I don't have the right. I don't have the authority.
Just a year and a half later, with full belief in the circumstances presented, following the teachings of Stanislavski, he made the following statement.
This trio of channels contained talking armies that deceived and brainwashed you very professionally.
On February 3rd, 2021, three Ukrainian television channels, ZIK, News One, and 112 Ukraine, were shut down. The decision was made by the National Security and Defense Council under Zelensky's order, of course.
There is currently no threat to freedom of speech or media business in Ukraine.
I will repeat those words. There is no threat to freedom of speech. This was said on the day when three television channels were shut down. A year later, Zelensky fulfilled another obligation. Let's call it task number 5. He banned the opposition.
Certain political parties' activities are suspended at the time of martial law.
On March 20th, 2022, the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine, under Zelensky's orders, banned 11 opposition parties. No one in Ukraine objected to the funeral of freedom of speech. Those who could have objected were either killed, arrested, or fled the country.
We were told that under Zelensky, dollar would cost 45. There would be chaos in Ukraine, there would be war. But none of this happened.
Zelensky is not much of a prophet. Although in 2019, there was no order on the organization of training for a battalion tactical group of the 4th Operational Brigade to carry out combat special tasks in the Joint Forces operation as part of the armed forces of the Ukrainian Brigade. This is a secret document confirming Ukraine's preparation for an attack on Donbass in March 2022. Evidence can be found in other documents as well, including the new military strategy approved by Zelensky after the meeting at MI6, which we discussed in the first episode.
We see words from Oxford Dictionary and a term, existential threat, never used before. Also, for the first time ever, we see in this document the use of population as a human shield. The document stated that Ukraine should prepare for active offensive actions to liberate Donbas. It was clear that the war till the last Ukrainian was being planned.
As you can see, the provocation was successful. Russia struck a few days earlier than Ukraine, and Zelensky was taken aback in fright.
On my way from the Kremlin, I called Zelensky and said, "Listen, I just came from a meeting. Putin has no intention of killing you." Zelensky asked, "Are you sure?" I replied, 100% sure. 2 hours later, Zelensky returned to his office and recorded a video saying, "I'm not afraid. Everyone's in place. We're all working."
The president doesn't leave Kyiv and stays with the people. What an artist does. Perhaps he'll finally be awarded with an Oscar. After all, he tries his best, especially in this video.
This is where I live. Is this the president's bed? Were you here on the 24th? I was. Well, we also went down to the bomb shelter.
Looking at a tiny room, one can't help but sympathize with the president. This poor guy lives and works in purely Spartan conditions.
So this is where I live. Well, could you say this is your home? It's my home. I've lived here for a year.
I almost believed it. Alas, the head of Ukraine lied again.
There is a well-equipped bomb shelter on Bankova Street. It was built during the Soviet era, when the Soviet Union faced a real nuclear threat. These are long-term facilities that allowed every member of the apparatus to function, not just one individual. So there are no small rooms there, of course. Well, anything can be staged.
But who cares about the truth when everyone is watching the tragic comedy starring Zelensky? The first thing his PR team did after February 24, 2022, was a new image, the military style, as if the president had just returned from the front lines. The unshaven look, the sunken face due to sleepless nights of hard work. However, narcologists would argue, all the signs of cocaine abuse are evident. Constant nose sniffing, an inappropriate reaction. Speeches solely from the prompter. But British specialists took precautions. They even created a hologram of the Ukrainian president.
All of these technological possibilities can change public life.
This addiction can be explained. It is quite common in the acting industry from which Zelensky comes from. Unfortunately for the country, the Ukrainian president not only didn't quit, but apparently let himself go. It all began with weed.
Medical marijuana, in my opinion, is normal. It is sold in small quantities, droplets.
In 2020, Zelensky proposed legalizing cannabis in the country. At that time, his suggestion didn't go any further. However, everything changed when the war began. It's no secret that Ukrainian soldiers get stoned before going into battle, and weed is the least harmful substance they consume on the front lines, though they have someone to look up to in that regard. This is very pleasing to American and British intelligence agencies. It would be a sin not to take advantage of a drug-addicted president for their own purposes. He is completely manageable. I suppose that Western handlers supply him with the purest drugs. It brings to mind the Opium Wars when England, in order to advance its interests, addicted almost the entire Chinese elite to drugs. I cannot speak for all of Zelensky's inner circle, but he himself alone was enough to accomplish what would never work with a sober person. For example, turning the country into an experimental playground and convincing others that it was great.
We are interested in testing modern systems in the fight against the enemy, and we are inviting arms manufacturers to test the new products here. So I think for our partners in Poland, in the United States, France, or Germany, it's a good chance to test their equipment.
The sixth goal Zelensky was tasked with was to turn Ukraine into a testing ground, not only for weapons, but also for experiments on people. In 2005, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, or DTRA, was established in the country. It is a pet project of the U.S. Department of Defense, and one of its tasks is to study biological threats, including deadly viruses and bacteria.
Since 2005, the American side has been involved in modifying Ukrainian laboratories, selecting and training personnel, and gradually advancing its interests, goals, and tasks in the research field. They are approaching the old Soviet developments. The collection of pathogens and strains in Ukraine, remaining from the Soviet Union, was estimated at $2 billion. The American side did everything to obtain this collection.
After the Maidan, the DTRA expanded its operations in Ukraine with the assistance of Elena Suprin, a U.S. citizen and the daughter of Ukrainian immigrants. In Ukraine, she served as the acting Minister of Health. Suprin opened the doors of all biolaboratories in the country to Americans and even allowed to establish new ones. From that moment, mass experiments on Ukrainians, both civilians and military personnel, have begun. And in the documents of the DTRA, a new abbreviation appeared, UP, which stands for Ukrainian Project.
There were genetic samples collected in large quantities from 4,000 servicemen of the Ukrainian army from different regions of the country, north, south, west, east, including Kiev, Odessa, Kharkov, and Lviv, with 1,000 individuals in each city participating in this blood donation. This was part of the UP8 project. Officially, it was presented with benevolent intentions, namely to determine human body resistance to specific pathogens depending on the region of the country.
According to some reports, in January 2016, in Kharkiv, approximately 20 Ukrainian soldiers died within 2 days from a flu-like virus. Another 200 soldiers were hospitalized.
The intelligence of the Donetsk People's Republic has previously reported on research activities involving American military specialists. Research took place in a closed laboratory located in the village of Shelkostansia. It is situated 30 kilometers from the city of Kharkiv. According to our information, the leakage of the California strain of deadly influenza occurred precisely from there.
From this day onwards, Ukraine turned into a petri dish. Outbreaks of cholera, hepatitis, and botulism were recorded here. But what wouldn't you do for the sake of science, especially in a foreign country? Therefore, in 2020, DTRA spent another $80 million on research in Ukraine.
There wouldn't be an order from the U.S. Secretary of Defense to carry out work on the development of genetically targeted biological weapons on Ukrainian territory. However, it was possible that they would write an order for research to be conducted on combating certain diseases like tularemia more effectively. That's what they would write. And this is what can be found in official documents.
The Pentagon's plans were disrupted by Russia's special operation. Now, the Russians could gain access to documents and biomaterials. This alarmed the United States to such an extent that in March 2022, Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland let the secret out in the Senate.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of.
Foreign specialists in the areas of plague, cholera, and hepatitis left Ukraine. Instead, the country was filled with soldiers of fortune. However, these guys have been welcome there since the days of the Maidan. This became President Zelensky's seventh commitment. In 2015, the Orbital operation was launched. It was a British training program for the armed forces of Ukraine, conducted, of course, in accordance with NATO standards. In 2016, Ukraine and the United States signed the Concept of Development of Partnership between the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine and the Department of Defense of the United States for 5 years. In the autumn of 2017, American instructors discussed logistics and cooperation with the Nazi-affiliated Azov Battalion. The following year, Azov Battalion was visited by Canadian military personnel as well.
I think the Ukrainian embassy here in Washington, in violation of the Geneva Conventions on Diplomacy, recruited these people, recruited soldiers, recruited mercenaries for their war against the Russian Federation. CIA is involved, perhaps not directly, but and military intelligence perhaps not directly, but they're there to advise, to give counsel, to make suggestions, to link people up and help with organization.
A year ago, NATO Secretary General Jan Stoltenberg stated that NATO had trained tens of thousands of Ukrainians.
They have trained Ukrainian troops for years. So tens of thousands of Ukrainian troops are now at the forefront of being trained, also for several years being trained by NATO allies. And they're now at the front fighting against invading Russian forces.
In February 2022, hundreds of foreign mercenaries joined them. Among them was the communist and anti-fascist John McIntyre, who served in the U.S. military, like myself. He arrived in Ukraine with the sole purpose of gathering evidence of crimes committed by the armed forces of Ukraine and sharing it with the world. Throughout this time, John risked his life, as he could be exposed at any moment. A year later, he managed to escape to Russia.
I can't remember if it's Stavki or Svatki. I can never remember, but I actually seen a church that was blown up. It was so sad to see. I mean, it was the most beautiful church I'd ever seen. They said, oh, that's a Russian church. Yeah, so that's the wrong kind of church because they speak the wrong kind of language, you know.
John said that a mercenary in Ukraine earns around $1,350 per month. However, if a mercenary in Ukraine is involved in combat operations, he gets $3,500 a month. That kind of money, one can kill even unarmed people with impunity.
There was three soldiers, Nazar Kuzmin, Rico Chavez, and Aurelio from France. Basically, they took, I believe, two or three Russian POWs, and they put them in like a trench in the position, and they shot them in the back of the head. And they taken, the reason I seen this video and photographic evidence is because they take this and they post this to a pro-Russian Telegram channel.
In fact, there's been a long-standing affinity between the United States and Ukrainian nationalists. It began immediately after World War II, when the Americans took the fleeing accomplices of Bandera under their wing. In 1948, the CIA launched a secret operation against the USSR. Later, it was given the codename Aerodynamic.
Frank Wisner Sr., who was a CIA officer in charge, he worked with people who had been given him by the U.S. Army Counterintelligence Corps, Stepan Bandera and Mykola Lebed, who were essentially Nazi collaborators and murderers, war criminals, etc. He put together, with their assistance, recruiting and training Ukrainian dissidents to return to the Ukraine or to be taken out of the Ukraine, trained, and then sent back with weapons. And the intent was to divide the Ukraine from the then Soviet Union and make it into an independent country.
The connection between Ukrainian nationalists and terrorists within the CIA could be exposed. This meant war with the Soviet Union. Therefore, the intelligence agencies slightly modified their subversive activities.
They organized something called Prologue, which was a company in New York City that recruited dissidents and neo-Nazis and old Nazis from the Ukraine to make radio broadcasts, print newspapers, and pamphlets and things. And I think 1957, they had something like 1,200 hours of radio broadcasts and 100,000 or so newspapers and magazines that they printed and distributed both in the United States and Canada and also into the Ukraine.
At the same time, in Canada, a secret operation called Red Skin was launched. There is much less information available about it compared to the Aerodynamic. The only known fact is that it also involved Ukrainian nationalists.
They worked with the American intelligence services and with the British to bring a lot of right-wing neo-Nazis or old-time Nazis, people who collaborated with Lebed and Bandera, into Canada and created a tremendous organization called the Ukrainian Conference of Canada.
Today, Canada is the third country in terms of the number of Ukrainians. There are more Ukrainians than in my homeland. For comparison, the Ukrainian diaspora in the United States amounts to around 1 million people, while in Canada, it constitutes 1.3 million people. They represent a significant political force. And, of course, they lobby for the interests of Kyiv and the right-wing radicals in the country. What surprised me is that the descendants of some nationalists are shaping Canada's policies today. For example, Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Chrystia Freeland. Her much-loved grandfather, Mikhailo Komiak, worked as the editor-in-chief of a Nazi newspaper, Krakauer Nachrichten, Krakow News, in Poland. Historical figure of the 20th century. That's how this newspaper referred to Adolf Hitler. Its readers were convinced that the population of Galicia was ready to fight and die for a wholly unjust cause designed by you-know-who. Undoubtedly, children are not responsible for the actions of their parents, but Freeland calls her grandfather not a criminal, but a victim. A victim of the Soviet regime, of course. In 2016, Freeland paid tribute to her ancestor on Twitter. It turns out that her grandfather worked diligently to restore freedom and democracy to Ukraine by supporting Hitler and the Holocaust, I suppose. Freeland herself made a contribution to the destruction of the USSR. In the 1980s, she brought anti-Soviet propaganda materials, money, and video and audio recording equipment to Soviet Ukraine for local nationalists. As a result, she was banned from entering the Soviet Union. Today, in Russia, Freeland is also considered persona non grata. However, in the West, her photo with a flag of the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, a terrorist organization, does not hinder her political career. It was Freeland, together with former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom Boris Johnson, who convinced Western European countries to quickly supply weapons to Ukraine. In 2022, Canada provided Ukraine with $2 billion in direct financial assistance, an additional $500 million through bonds, and over $2.5 billion for military and humanitarian aid. Moreover, in Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, and other countries, PLOST, which is an analog of Hitlerjugend, the Hitler Youth, operates freely. A youth organization of Ukrainian nationalists that, during World War II, trained militia for the OUN and SS Volunteer Division Galicia. It was established as early as 1911. Stepan Bandera and Roman Shukovich emerged from PLOST. Among active members of this organization were also Canadian Minister Chrystia Freeland. A fostering of xenophobia and Russophobia continues today. PLOST members were present during the Maidan protests and later participated in the killings of residents in Donbas. In 2019, under pressure from the Ukrainian diaspora, Zelensky became the first president to officially recognize the PLOST movement in Ukraine through legislation. It has now become the primary educational structure for young Ukrainians, funded by the state. This is just one aspect of Zelensky's bloody agreement. Let's call it task number 8, the legalization of Nazism. A few years ago, neo-Nazis caused outrage in Western media. However, today, Nazism and fascist insignia have become a fashionable trend. Swastikas, SS symbols, and the Totenkopf skull have become a norm. Even President Zelensky posts photos of them on his social media accounts.
It's just kind of funny, like the, it's funny to me, like the links that the Ukrainian, media and the Western media had to go to, like, hey guys, remove your swastikas for the camera. Like, we're trying to get a good shot here. You know, your swastika is making us look bad, you know. But some of them are open Nazis. Open Nazis. Yeah, I mean, like, there's numerous, evidence on the internet of, like, people with swastika flags and stuff like that, tattoos, and throwing up the Hitler salute, all that stuff. I mean, it's,
in the middle of the last century, Hitler caused deaths of millions of innocent people. His ideology was rooted in hatred towards entire nations. Today, this ideology can be seen within the Ukrainian government and its army.
Basically, you know, you have this culture of like Stepan Bandera and like oh, Hitler was good and so on and so forth. I've asked them, like, okay, you know, you're fighting side by side by all these Polish guys, you know, like, you genocide, like, you know, 100,000 Polish and Jewish, you know, why are you Nazistic, you know? And they say, oh, well, this was war, this was way back. Like, no, this is genocide, like, you know. So they basically deny this genocide, even still to this day, you know.
We often forget history too quickly in the West. I come from Brittany, and several mass killings during World War II, whether in Oradour-sur-Glane or in Brittany, were committed by Ukrainian forces serving in the Nazi German army. And yet, the West once again seems to believe that having neo-Nazis in Ukraine is acceptable, while we fight them in the West. There is a clear inconsistency, as if there were the good and the bad Nazis.
So it turns out that the good Nazis are the ones who hate and kill Russians and fight against Russia. For these actions, the U.S. and Western Europe seem to forgive all of their sins.
It was necessary to build a Nazi Ukraine. It was being built during Poroshenko's presidency, of course. But bringing it to a state of a military conflict required, so to speak, shaping its population structure and preparing the population for war. And for that, a Jew was the best fit, because it provided a colossal excuse. What Nazism, so to speak, could exist with a Jewish president? Where are you from? Where are you from? Tell me, where are you from? He fainted.
As I have discovered, Zelensky himself is not against the Nazis and the atrocities committed by the Azov battalion.
Azov was one of those many battalions. They are what they are. They were defending our country. And later I want to explain to you. Everything from all the components of those volunteer battalions later were incorporated into the military of Ukraine.
Most likely, you haven't heard about it. The TV channel cut out the journalist's question and Zelensky's response. A Jewish president should not respond in such a manner about those who rob and kill unarmed people. We remember, the main thing is the picture. Western partners even overlooked the fact that the president of Ukraine and his associates robbed their own army and the supplied weapons. They want to offset the expenses through Ukrainian land. This is Agent Zelensky's ninth task. Fertile lands represented interest even for it. The Ukrainian constitution even has a separate article dedicated to Black Earth or Chernozem.
Even during my time there, in the central office, I heard that the same Monsanto corporation set its sights on the entire south of Ukraine, from Odessa to Mariupol. During the conflict, it seemed to me that over 30% of major Dutch corporations were present there. Land was actively sold to companies like Cargill and other global corporations that were operating in the region.
For example, Cargill's revenue in 2022 amounted to $165 billion. The GDP of Ukraine as a whole in 2021, before the war, amounted to approximately $200 billion. Until 2021, there was a moratorium on the sale of land in Ukraine. It was extended 10 times during that period, and land was leased out. However, Zelensky urgently needed loans. The IMF offered money in exchange for lifting the moratorium. Ukrainians were afraid that foreigners would start buying up land. In November 2019, the president, perhaps still in the role of the righteous screen character Goloborodko, hurried to reassure the people.
Foreigners and companies with foreign founders will be able to purchase Ukrainian land only if the consent of the Ukrainian people is granted through an all-Ukrainian referendum.
Spoiler, there was no referendum. In July 2021, the moratorium on the sale of land was lifted. Yes, foreigners do not have a formal right to buy land, but there is a loophole. Technically, Ukrainian companies under foreign control can make purchases.
In our country, this is called a straw man. It exists everywhere in the world, where local residents can protect themselves to some extent. In such cases, a fictitious person, a straw man, is employed, and you act as you please.
In February 2018, the Institute of Agricultural Economics assessed Ukrainian land. It turned out to be inexpensive. $2,500 per hectare was the maximum price, but that's the upper limit. The majority are willing to buy land for $1,000. And here's how much agricultural land costs in my home country. So we're in 2018, black soil. Now let's assess arable land in Western Europe. Same year, 2018. So Ukrainian land is inexpensive. It is nearly 13 times cheaper than the most expensive land, which is in Italy. That's why there is high demand for it among Europeans. It makes sense for them to invest in agriculture in Ukraine, since they have limited access to Chernozem. But why should we be concerned about it? Land in America is fine.
This soil is located in Europe, not in the U.S. If it is removed from the food cycle, Europe will have much less chance of being self-sufficient and acting independently. And that's why there is a plan to reduce Europe's food security in order to better control neighboring countries. The U.S. doesn't need the grain, but they need control. And control comes only when you control food security of other countries. And Ukraine was a very, very successful project from the perspective of the U.S.
I would say that Ukraine remains a very successful project for the United States. These are not just agricultural corporations that are making money. In 2022, the investment firm BlackRock offered to help Ukraine rebuild its economy. Of course, this refers to the future prospect.
The BlackRock company has the greatest global influence in society, as it controls almost all banks. It's impossible to even imagine the extent of their assets and the influence they have, both on German and Ukrainian politics.
In May 2023, Zelensky signed an agreement with BlackRock. Last September, the cost of reconstruction and economic recovery of the country was estimated at nearly $350 billion. However, later Kyiv increased the expenses to $1 trillion. After Zelensky's agreement with BlackRock, people started writing on Twitter that Ukraine was becoming privatized and sold to funds. And you know, it seems to be true.
BlackRock doesn't invest in recovery. Instead, it builds dependencies and spheres of influence through reconstruction. Politics, army, and economy form a three-headed dragon currently running the world.
I'm not sure about the entire world, but Ukraine will definitely be working for BlackRock and similar companies for the next 300 years. And at the same time, for the governments of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada. From 2014 to 2021, America allocated over $2.5 billion to Ukraine. These are the findings of the Kiel Institute for the World Economy, a German research institute. Since the beginning of 2022, the United States have been the leader in terms of military aid provided to Ukraine. From January 2022 to January 2023, Kyiv received over $46 billion for military purposes. Yes, we spent less on the war in Afghanistan. $43 billion over a little more than 9 years. The United Kingdom doesn't spare any expense also. In 2022, they transferred nearly $3 billion to Kyiv, and they plan to spend the same amount in 2023. Over the course of the year, NATO countries have provided Ukraine with approximately $120 billion in assistance.
I may turn out to be a bad prophet, but I am confident that as soon as peace is established in Ukraine, the flow of dollars and credits will stop. And instead, we will be grabbed by the throat on all fronts, demanding the repayment of these debts. Nobody will care that Ukraine is currently incapable of repaying its debts. It simply cannot. Its debts now exceed our gross domestic product significantly.
In May 2022, Biden signed the Lend-Lease Law. This means that Ukraine started receiving weapons and equipment on credit, just like the Soviet Union and the United Kingdom during World War II. Agreeing to this plunder became commitment number 10 for Zelensky in this deal with the devil. The president of Ukraine called it a historic step. I would call it a leap into the abyss. Do you know when Russia repaid its debt to the U.S. for Lend-Lease? In 2006. It took them over 60 years to repay the debt. Ukraine already owes the European Union $132 billion, which is 90% of its GDP. Even freezing payments will not allow the economy to settle its debts on time. Meanwhile, the country is experiencing rampant inflation. Food prices have risen by 26.5%. The poverty rate has jumped from 5.5% to 24%, affecting over 7 million people. The country has lost one-fifth of its territory. And, most importantly, hundreds of thousands of lives have been lost.
Iran is a peace candidate. He turned around and betrayed that. And what's always astounded to me is that how he manages to keep so many regular Ukrainian boys going into this war to get themselves killed in a war that they simply cannot win, and yet they keep going. Just in Bakhmut, by the way, the Ukrainians lost more men than the United States lost in the entire Vietnam War.
So the rights of millions of citizens have been trampled upon. Ukrainian men are being sent to the front lines to be slaughtered like sacrificial lambs, snatched right off the streets. The Russian language and culture have been practically eradicated. The canonical church is on the verge of being outlawed. The country has been turned into a safari for foreign mercenaries and a testing ground for bloody experiments. Agent Volodymyr Zelensky has accomplished the tasks assigned by foreign intelligence agencies. The question is, will those in power still need someone who knows too much and wants too much?